Okay, my name is RJ Green. I'm 16 years old. Today is November 22nd, 2018, and I'm speaking with Janetta Green, who is my grandma. We are recording in Penfield, New York. How are you feeling today, Jima?
I feel great. It's a great day, Thanksgiving Day, a lot to be thankful for.
Okay, here we go. Let's start with the questions. Why did you agree to come to this interview today?
I agreed because I would like to share some of my experience with you and give you more insight as to who I am, where I've been, and where I am now, and to share in your educational experience as you complete this assignment, share with you some of my thoughts and some of my values, and to impress that you were, and I was impressed that you were interested and knowing about me and that you chose me to do the interview with. It could have been anybody, but you chose me. And for that, I thank you.
Nice. Okay, next question. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood, what you were like as a child?
What I was like or what my childhood was like?
Both.
Okay. My childhood, I came up in Alexandria, Louisiana. I lived with my mother and father. I have three brothers, and I'm an only girl. We lived in a two-bedroom home where it was important that the boys and the girls didn't, you know, sleep in the same bedroom. So as a result, I had my own bedroom, but my parents made a sacrifice that my three brothers would sleep together, and my mother and father would sleep in the living room. I had a good childhood. I didn't know we were poor, and if we were, we had a lot of love and a lot of caring. My father worked at the VA hospital as a cook, and my mother worked in the laundry as a presser. And we didn't have a lot of money, but again, we had a lot of love. We were brought up in a religious home that where church was important. You didn't go to church, you didn't play. If you were sick and you didn't go to school, you had to be sick no matter how you felt at that day. The town that I grew up in was 100% segregated. I went to an all segregated school. I went to Peabody Elementary Negro School, and I also went to Peabody Negro High School. Some of the experiences that many may have had, we only had them in a closed environment because we were not allowed out of that particular environment unless we were to go downtown. And even when you went downtown, you had to wait your turn in terms of when you're gonna be serviced. So I had a good childhood, but it was growing up, you know, and it was contained. And I was a little tomboy because I didn't have any sisters. So whenever my brothers needed somebody to make the fifth person on the basketball team or to play football, I always got a chance to do that. So as a result, I had no interest in cooking or cleaning or anything like that, but I had the interest in playing. In high school, I played tennis, I played basketball, I played in the band. And I was always adventurous. And I always took chances on things, but I didn't have a lot of exposure. But I did have a loving and caring family.
Wow. Okay, a lot of information. Tell me of your favorite memory of me.
I got a chuckle with that. There are so many memories of you. I think one I really remember at a very, very young age, I used to sneeze all of the time when I had chocolate. And I used to always just sneeze. And finally one day you said, "Well, Chima, if you know you sneeze with chocolate, why don't you eat it?" So you've always been such a logical kid. Another memory that I've had is like, you cannot come back over here because all you do is cry. You cannot come over here until you stop crying. But I've had very, very good experience with my grandkids. I've shared in some of their recreational activities. many of their educational experience, and the highlights is going to a football game, watching little RJ run the football as small as he is, or knock one of the, be tackling somebody that, you know, that's bigger than him. It's like the boy has perseverance, he's strong, and he's going to be successful in there. And he wasn't afraid of stuff. And sometimes it's like, you should be afraid of that. I'm afraid for you. But I really enjoyed being around him as a grandmother. And I had that experience when I was growing up, and I was able to be around my grandmother for about 5 to 7 years that I really, really remember. And I tried to share myself with RJ and the other grandkids as they were growing up, and I'm still trying to share with them.
Can you tell me about one of the most difficult moments in your life?
There were a couple of difficult moments in my life. And the first one that I really, really recall, at 10 years old, it never snowed in Alexandria. And this one night, it snowed, and we had left the heaters on. We used to have the gas heaters that were on the floor. And I got up to go to the bathroom, and I stood in front of the heater. And a flame caught onto my pajamas. And I immediately got out of it. I panicked, but I got out of the pajamas. And it was a closet that was right next to the heater. And I threw the pajamas in the closet and ran out of the house. And because my parents slept in the living room, they heard me. And fortunately, the house did not catch on fire. After that, I went to the hospital, and I was in the hospital with a serious burn for about a week. And I went to, the only hospital we had was the charity hospital. We couldn't go to a hospital that was right there in town. So they had to take me to Pineville to this charity hospital, where I stayed for a week with a severe burn. And I used to remember just crying all the time, because I was at 10 years old, I felt alone. And I used to just wait for my mother or my father to come, but they were working. And then they would have to get the bus to Pineville, which about 15 miles from Alexandria, and come over to see me. And I could just see them walking down. I'd look out the window, and I'd see them coming down the sidewalk to visit me. And again, that goes with having a caring and loving family who made sacrifices to make sure, even though they had worked all day long and the obstacles that they had in trying to get to me, they got to me. And then the next experience that was very painful for me was at 16, I was a senior in high school, and at 2 o'clock one morning, my cousin knocked on the door. My father worked a part-time job, and he had gone to visit his father. And that morning, and he was coming back from his father, but my cousin, my mother's cousin, his cousin, knocked on the door. And he said, Emma, get up. He said, James is dead. And my mother went back to bed. And I went in and I said, you need to get up. I said, Cousin Alex said, my dad is dead, you need to get up. So she got up, and he told her that my father had been in an accident, and she had to go with him to identify the body. And that was painful for me. And at that time, it's like it wasn't a reality at all. And as it turned out, my father had a massive heart attack as he was coming back from visiting his father. And he must have felt a sense of something happening, because he had worked a part-time job at the country club. And he came home. And then he said, I got to go see my dad. And he said, I got to go see my dad. So that's what he did. He went and he saw his dad. And on his way back, he had a massive heart attack and he died right then. And just going through that, it still, we were like in a fog. And I had an older brother and two younger brothers that were right there with me. And my mother, I just felt so sorry for her too, because she just went through the motions. And even after we buried him, she went through the motion. And my mother was a cook, and she could cook. But she would come home from work. That she had a new job at that point at the high school, working in the kitchen. And after she'd come home from work, she'd just go to bed. And we were basically on our own. And that was in September. And from September through November, we kind of fend for ourselves. And I can't tell you what we ate, how we ate, but we ate and people would bring food on, but all she would do is just go to bed. When she came home, she was just going through the motion. So in November, after about 2 months, we came home from school, and she had cooked a pot roast and some green beans and had cooked a dinner. And we was like, we're not gonna eat that, you know, we don't know. It's like she finally began to come out of it. And I was rebelling because I was my dad's black gal, as he would call me. My dad would wash my hair. My dad would take care of me. And as an only girl, I was basically spoiled. And I just missed him. So I started rebelling. And I got to the point, I said, my mom, I said, you can't tell me what to do, you know? And it kind of went on like that. She kind of put up with me for a while. So then she said, if I can't tell you what to do, you're going to have to get out. So my father's brother lived in California, and I wrote him a letter and told him, I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, because my mother told me I was going to have to get out. But I didn't tell him the whole truth, you know. So I went on not thinking anymore about it. So one day, after he had gotten the letter, he called my mother, and she said, she won't listen, and I'm not going to have it. So he said, send her out here and I'll take care of her. Now I knew what that meant. It's like, I'm gonna have to go out there and it's gonna be strict rules. I'm not gonna be able to play my basketball. I'm not gonna be able to have my friends or whatever. So I began to at least listen to her, you know? And I went on about my way. After I graduated from high school, my mother, fast forward before then. So we worked that out, and I graduated from high school. And my mother educated, after my father died, three of us. Well, really four, but my oldest brother was just about to graduate from college. But my mother made sure her working extra jobs, working and taking care of us, she made sure that we all were educated. I got my bachelor's degree from Southern University. My next brother got his bachelor's degree from Southern University, and my baby brother got his degree from Southern University. Now, I had loans, but we were able to get $10 a month for, you know, expenses or whatever, but I was able to get loans, and my brothers were able to get loans. But after I graduated and I got a job with my youngest brother, I was able to send him to college. I was able to spend, you know, to help with his college expenses. And I always was grateful and thankful after I had finished school. So I always sent my brothers money when I worked. I got a job here in Rochester and I worked. But my mother was a great woman. She persevered, and she took care of us after she came through the storm after my father passed away. And she took care of us, and she's always been supportive. And even RJ's daddy, once he was in school, she made sure she'd send those $25 a month to him every day. She didn't have a lot, but every month, she'd always make sure she took care of her grandkids. And I have a strong desire for taking care of my grandkids and doing as much as I can for them, because my mother fast-forwarded the blessings to my son and to RJ's father.
Can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influence on your life?
My mother was one person, and again, with the parents of perseverance, she believed in me. She had faith in me, even though, you know, we went through a period of time where I was a little rebellious, but she always thought that I was gonna make something out of myself, and she always supported me. And also my guidance counselor, because the high school I went to, everybody, you talk to that guidance counselor, and the goal for the parents and of those, the guidance counselor, was that everybody would go to college. No, I don't know how we afforded, except for loans or whatever, but they made sure that we, you know, had an educational experience. And part of the reason was that in my hometown, the job that you would have would be working at a chicken poultry or teaching. But you had to be educated, and they emphasized education, so did the parents, and so did the school. So I would say my mother and my guidance counselor.
What advice would you give your teenage self?
To myself? I would say, study harder. Know that there are consequences for your behavior. To be the best person that you can be. To take chances, but be careful of the situations that you get yourself in. Be your own person, and just be respectful of others. And that's basically what I could say.
What was your mother / father like when he or she was growing up? Do you have any favorite memories or stories about them?
I didn't understand what you said.
Do you have any, how was your mom and dad when they were growing up? Like, oh, do you know them?
Me as a child?
No, do you know if they told you how they were when they were a child, or like how they were like while they were growing up, or when they were younger?
With my mother, she was more of a mama's girl, because there was three sets of children. I had her brother. Then it was two of them from a different father, and then four of them from another different father. And she was very, very close to her mother. And her mother used to work for Miss Hathorne, who was one of the few jobs that she can have as a maid or a housekeeper. And that's what she did. She worked with them as helping her with the chickens and with the duties and responsibility of Miss Hathorne's house. Her mother was very loving and very caring. We would always spend Sunday dinner with my grandmother. She graduated from high school. My father went to the service, and he worked at the VA hospital. And just some of the memories that I have with them together is that on a Wednesday night, when he always got paid, he always brought us candy. And, you know, just a family time. I know the family times that I had with them, especially on a Wednesday night, you know, And even on a Wednesday night, when he evidently he kind of saw his death coming, because he just told my mother, "I won't always be here with you, but I want you to make sure you take care of my children. And I don't mind you getting married again, but I don't want anybody to come in and mistreat your children." My father always made sure that we had things. It was important to him that his children had things, even though some of the bills may not be paid, even though sometimes the electricity or the telephone was cut off. He always made sure that we had food, we had shelter, and he was a loving, caring father. And at Christmas time, that he'd buy whatever he couldn't afford. And that was one of the things that influenced me, that sometimes those bills wouldn't be paid and the collectors would call. And now I am just passionate about paying for my bills. But my parents were very loving, and they were very caring, and they were very supportive of us in whatever we did. I don't know if that answers your question.
I think it does. Can you tell me some of your favorite stories from work?
From work? Well, one I can think in particular, and I don't know if it's good or bad, but we had a supervisor that had no respect for what we did in our admissions office. And he was always disking us. So what we decided one day, and your dad stopped by the office on a Friday, we were working 6-7 o'clock that night to make sure, because we were always responsible, but we were making sure that we had gotten our work done. And I was the supervisor of that area. So whenever my little group that I supervised weren't coming in, then they would have to call me and I would have to call my supervisor. So we got all of our work done. And that Monday morning, the people, my reportees, called to say they wouldn't be in, okay? Then I called my supervisor to say that I was sick and I wouldn't be in. So we staged a coup. And that, it was kind of like, come on, you gotta at least respect the job that we're doing. You cannot continue to not be supportive of us and share this workload when you had other people who were not doing things, okay? So we staged a coup, and that was very exciting for me. And then another experience that I had was that my supervisor, later on, they started a new program outside of our building, and I had been working in my area for over 25, 30 years. And because it was a new program, and they just knew that I was very dependable, I knew what I was doing, and I would represent my job well, and they were gonna send me to another site to perform this job. Well, I didn't want to go there to start over again trying to prove myself to somebody else. So at that time, I just decided that I was 55, so I could retire. So I just decided I wasn't going to do it. And I had this new supervisor who tells me how great I am. And all I can tell him, you don't even know me. You know, you've just been here 2 or 3 months and you don't know me. And that was the first time that I'd ever gone to the union. I've never, ever gone to the union. And my union rep said, "All right, Janetta," he said, "I understand why they want to send you. And you would have to go. You have to go. He said, "But all you have to do is to go over there," and he said, "close your door, put your feet on top of your desk, and they can't do anything to you. So what they'll do in about 6 months, they'll come back and they'll evaluate you. And then," he said, "you have the skills. So what you do is say, okay." You show them or demonstrate to them what you can do. So I went to the union and talking with my supervisor, I said, "Okay, I'm fine, but I don't want to go." And then I was in a meeting and my supervisor announced that they had a new person that they were going to send over there. And it's like, I didn't ask him why, I didn't care, but I didn't have to go. And those were two highlights. But I had a wonderful job. I enjoyed working with the people that I work with. I enjoyed working with the students that I had, those were two highlights. There were other, you know, positive experience and negative experience that I've had, but those are two that I remembered. Having to go to the union, and that's something that I had never ever done in my life, and I'd seen people do that. And even as a result of me being firm with that, I did get a discretionary salary increase. The other thing that was memorable in my experience is having to be promoted and getting discretionary salary increases for the job that I had done.
Just a quick question, where did you work?
I worked at the Rochester, well, first of all, I worked with Monroe Community College for 2 years there. And after I left Monroe Community College, I went to SUNY Brockport, Rochester Educational Opportunity Center, and it was a program that was administered by State University College at Brockport, and that's where I retired from after 37 and a half years working at Brockport under their umbrella.
Okay. What important lessons has your religious/spiritual beliefs taught you? Will you share them with me?
Being non-judgmental, accepting people for who they are, to not have a hard heart, to be forgiving, to be loving, to be caring, to be respectful, to obey the commandments, to be able to have your religious view and accept people for their views, not to be self-righteous, but know that I have faults, that I make mistakes, that other people make mistakes, and that just because a person makes a mistake or they don't believe like I believe, that I can't deal with them, or they may not be as religious or non-religious as another person, is that you can't separate yourself. And to just understand people are people, and all of us are God's children, and to be respectful and caring of that.
Are there any positive moments or memories from your life that you think shaped who you are today? Are there any negative events or memories that you think shaped who you are today?
I think one of the positive would be when I came to Rochester. I was 21 years old, and I worked with, I was a girl supervisor for at a settlement house for girls 8 through 18, and I provided recreational programs for those girls. And the positive things about that is that these girls' experience were very, very poor. They had not had any exposure. Some of the things that they did was kind of unheard of from the background that I came from, just in terms of the swearing, the pregnancy, the disrespectful, not honoring their, doing respecting their parents, and doing basically what they want to do. They had not had any experience in terms of associating with people on different levels. And one of the positive experiences that I had with those people, I was able to get them to a point where they began to take pride in some of the drives that we took. I was the first one that took them to United Nations Week in New York. They had never been outside of New York. They had out of Rochester. And I had them to do fundraisers to get there. I taught them some of the questions that they would be asked, some of the things that they would see, and how they were supposed to at least present themselves. Many of the girls were teenagers who were getting pregnant. I would make sure that I had workshops from Planned Parenthood, and that was risky during that time because that was a no-no and you weren't supposed to talk about that. And the positive thing that really came out of Baton Street was that it encouraged me to pursue my master's degree. Because at that time, I just thought, well, maybe I need more experience as a counselor. Maybe I need more, you know, in terms of how to deal with some of the behaviors and some of the problems that I encountered. So as a result, I pursued my master's degree. And it was 10 years after I had gotten my bachelor's degree. And that was a very, very positive experience. Some of the negative experience?
Yes.
Let me just tell you another positive experience. Coming from a 100% segregated town, I had not been exposed to a diverse population at all. But I've always wanted more, that I've always taken risks. So after I graduated from college, with $20 in my pocket, I went to a job in Dingman's Ferry, Pennsylvania. And at that time, in a staff of 250 people, I was the only African American or black or colored person, as they would call it at that time. That experience was also very, very positive. The exposure that I got was unbelievable. I had never been to a Broadway play. I had never been in an environment with totally just the Caucasians or whites. I had never gotten on an airplane before. I had never eaten at the same table with whites. I had never encountered that experience at all. And that was the most valuable experience that I had. Because the things that you hear about whites this and whites that and how you gotta be that, I found that there were good people in that group and there were bad people. And I learned that. And as a result of that, as I got out into the world, I accepted people for who they are, no matter what they were. Along with that same experience, though, I also encountered a few people, and that's the negative experience, that didn't want to be bothered with me at all as, you know, as a black or colored person. But I overcame that in terms of just learning that everybody's not going to like you anyway. So it took me a minute to do that because all of this was new for me. But I'm thankful and grateful for that experience and for being exposed to something that I wouldn't have just gotten, you know, right out of school. But that was an excellent experience for me.
Can you tell me about some of the most important lessons you've learned in life?
Some of the important lessons that greed can be a downfall, that it's not all about money, that family is important, and I may not be as close to my brothers, or all of my brothers, but it is important, and no matter where we are, I'm here and they're there, we still have a mutual love and respect for them. That I cannot do it alone. that my success is not just depending on me, but people around me, and that my environment, and that's basically it. I cannot do it alone, and it's important to bring people into your circle, no matter who they are, where they are. I also know that just because I think something is right, I cannot impose what my values, and that was a lesson I had to learn. I cannot impose my values on them. I also learned that I cannot be controlling, because people are who they are, and I have to respect them for who they are, because I think you need to be in this box, or whatever. And if you don't do it a certain way, then it's like you're wrong. But I've learned that you can't control people, and that you have to be respectful of their opinions, their views, whether you agree with them or not. Does that answer your question?
Yes. How would you like to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered as one of my favorite songs. When you think about one of my favorite songs, if I can help somebody as I travel in this world, then my living would not be in vain. I would like to be remembered as one who was a friend, who was loving, who was compassionate, who was helpful, who made sacrifices, and cared as much about others as I cared about myself, that I was one who would fast forward a blessing, that I would share with you the experience if you can benefit and not be selfish in keeping all of my experiences to myself, but to just share with you some of the experiences that I've had in life and that you might benefit from them. But my main theme is that I can be a friend to somebody, and that I can travel this world, and that my living will not have been in vain.
Okay, we got three more, Jima. Do you have any regrets?
I do have regrets. I wish I would have been more understanding and not as controlling after I got married. I just wish I could have had some kind of balance. And again, not be so controlling. And that I would have been more, for lack of a better word, been there after my separation, been more attentive to my children, that I would have just been there and not put myself in the way at their expense by just kind of not taking care of their needs as much as I should have and just focusing on myself. So I wish I wouldn't have not been as focused on myself, especially during the time of my separation and the time of my divorce. And I wish, even though I love my children and I'm there for my children even now, but I just wish I could have been at the time more focused, much more focused on them than for myself.
What are your hopes and wishes for me, for my children?
For you and for your children?
So your grandchildren and me. We're great-grandchildren.
My great-grandchildren. That you would be, RJ would be self-sufficient. that he would be, he would honor his mother and father, that he would have respect for his elders, for his siblings, that he would be kind and compassionate, and that he would understand the importance of education, and that he would understand the importance of giving back, for he has been really blessed with the many blessings that he's had, but to also share those blessings that he's received with others. And for the grandkids, I would hope that they would be respectful of their father, that they would be honest, that the moral values that RJ would instill in them would show that they would be loving, they would be kind, and they would do unto others as they would have them do to them.
Okay. Last question, but I might ask you an extra one. So
this is the last question?
Yeah. Oh. I might ask you one more, though.
Oh.
Thinking about your family many generations from now, and knowing that they may hear this recording, is there anything you want to say to them? Any wisdom or advice you'd like to share?
Repeat that. No.
Thinking about your family many generations from now, mm-hmm. and knowing that they may hear this recording, is there anything you want to say to them? Any wisdom or advice you'd like to share?
I would like to say to them that I love them, that I appreciate them, that I may not have been in their eyes at sometimes what they wanted me to be, but I always loved them, I always took care of them, and I'd also like them to know that whatever or if I've done anything to offend them, that I am sorry and that I regret not, you know, being there for them. I'd also like to share with them that I am so happy that I was angry with their father, with my son's father, and I had an unforgiving spirit, but I can say that I have forgiven the father for what I deem was wrong or what he did wrong or whatever, knowing that it wasn't just one person that was involved in the breakup of the marriage or the separation, and that I have truly forgiven him, that I can be around him, that I can talk with him, and that a blessing is that no matter what has happened, you know, in a family, that you don't want to disregard other family members. For example, because I may not get along or had not gotten along with the father, that I can't be around him or he can't be around his children, his grandchildren at the same time, that I'm around them. And I'm glad that I've grown to the point that we can be together as a family, you know, whatever the differences may have been, and I'm glad that we've resolved some of the differences, and that I do know that I have forgiven them for their father for, you know, some of the things that happened to me or my perception of things that happened to me.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you, I'm going to try to get two more questions out of you. Is that okay?
Is that another thing?
No, but I...
Okay, all right. Are we done with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, first one, I was wondering, since you moved from Louisiana to here, what made you stay in Rochester?
What made me stay in Rochester? First of all, I moved here because I had a job, okay? And why did I stay here? I had only planned to stay here 2 or 3 years. But I got married. That's what made me stay at the time. That's what happened. I got married. And I had a family, and I had a job. I had wonderful friends. The Rochester has always been a was always a wealthy community.